Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. We're joined today by Jordan Neal, the offensive coordinator at Hendricks College in Conway, Arkansas. Hendricks College had the number one offense in all college football in 2016 and averaged over 600 yards per game. Today, Jordan's joining us for the second time on the podcast, and we're excited to have him back. So, Jordan, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about the game planning behind this prolific offense that you have. How do you approach that as the week begins?
One of the main objectives that we have going into any game is we have a list of goals that we kind of gauge our performance on you know, each week. And obviously for us, the number one goal is to do whatever it takes to win the ball game. That goes without saying. And I think I've kind of mentioned that before. But, you know, we've got some other goals that we want to accomplish throughout the course of the game. And that informs the manner in which we game plan and the manner in which we prioritize and make a pecking order for our different calls and you know, trying to prioritize running the football and what comes from that. And so the first thing I would say is that when we get together at the beginning of the week, you know, we work really hard on Sunday evenings to kind of tie a bow on the previous game, go over the video. Our players come in and we work them out. They run. They kind of get the lactic acid out of their body after that game. And then we have a pretty long, pretty detailed, and pretty extensive session in film where we kind of break down what we just did, gauge our performance based on those goals that we outline. And then we turn the page and immediately get to work on the next opponent. I don't think that we're that unique from many other staffs. I mean, I think that's kind of the way most people do it. So we're not unique in that sense, but it's a big deal for us to really work against the clock because we, even though we take Monday off, that's for us our one 24-hour day that we give our players off, you know, and even though that day seems like there's a lot of time to get things done, you're not going to practice again until the following Tuesday afternoon. Even though that seems like a ton of time, I always find myself racing against the clock to just get all of my boxes checked off and make sure that we are prepared to go on Tuesday. Tuesday practice for us is really an opportunity for us to really prioritize our P&10 play calls and our first and second down. And that's when we get together versus our defense and we're going good on good or we're doing scout team, 7-on-7, whatever. Everything that we run on that Tuesday afternoon is designed to get 5 yards or more on first down. Obviously, in some situations, we want to be aggressive on first down or on second down and short. And it's not just about making those 5 yards, but we know as well as anybody that our third down success and our fourth down success, and then ultimately our ability to get the ball in the end zone or put it, you know, within field goal range is predicated off of that P&10 first play coming off the sideline and then, you know, any of our first down and second down opportunities that we have. So what we do is we make sure we're a 10 personnel and 11 personnel team. So we map out after kind of watching the film of who we're getting ready to go against. We map out what are going to be about our top 5 to 7 run plays in 10 personnel and 11 personnel. Obviously, in today's game, you can't just discriminate, just run, just pass. We're an RPO team. So we have to think in broader terms than just what run play we like. We have to see how that's going to match with what's taking place on the second and third level with linebackers and safeties and who we want to read, whether we want to read something to begin with or whether, you know, we feel better about just blocking with receivers and taking advantage of matchups that we like up front. Typically, we're going to find a way to get our best zone play in, and we're going to get our best situation for us to be able to run power. And those are kind of week-to-week staples that we rely on. But if we've got some special situations, maybe a buck sweep, maybe something that we don't have the ability to call with an abbreviated play call, or it's got some motion attached to it, you know, maybe a play call that takes a little bit longer to call, that would be the type of play that we would want to run on P&10, so that when we're coming off the sideline, we have the ability, we huddle on the sideline, we have the ability to disguise what personnel we're going to be coming out in. Don't give the personnel checkers for the other team the ability to see whether we're in 10 or 11, or if we're going to come out in a, you know, a dead twins situation, maybe even come out in 30 personnel, or, you know, we've had some series where we come out in jumbo and we snap the ball straight to a running back with 10 linemen on the field. That those are big priorities for us as we plan for first and second down, early down and distance, P and 10, coming off the sideline, plays that can kind of set the table for us to get a rhythm going on a given drive. So that's kind of the priority there on Sunday and Monday.
And obviously, Coach, for a team to put up the kind of numbers you guys do, you have to stay on the field. So third down is very important. Talk to us about your process for game planning third down.
Once we've kind of gotten the book closed on Tuesday's practice, you know, we have the ability to, you know, get a lot of good clips on film from Tuesday's practice, and then Wednesday morning come in, break it down, really see what we like, throw out what we don't like. I'm a big believer that if you don't execute something with confidence in practice, you're a lot better off throwing out a bad play and just living with the fact that you got other better plays that you can run with confidence than trying to fix, something that you didn't succeed with and that the kids may not be completely confident in. So we just kind of turn the page on Wednesday morning. And then immediately start thinking in terms of, okay, now we feel good about what we can accomplish on early downs and distances, get ourselves in a manageable third, and then in many situations, manageable fourth down situations. We typically go for it on fourth down. Whenever we cross the 50-yard line, we've gone for it on fourth down. We're backed up as far as the 25 or 30. Just kind of depends on the game flow and just the confidence that you have in a given play or a matchup that you may encounter throughout the course of the game. But kind of hearkening back, I know I'm not really talking about third and fourth down per se, but hearkening back to first and second down, what I can tell you is, you know, we were either number one or number two in the country in third down percentage and fourth down percentage last year. And I believe we went for it on fourth down close to 20 times. So we're averaging in 10 ball games going for it, you know, two or three critical situation fourth down plays that we're saying we have confidence that we can make that play. So I just believe that first and second down makes all the difference there. One of the things on third down I would like to point out is that just because it's third down and five, third down and eight, maybe even some situations third down and 10, if you know you've got two plays to work with, it's okay to line up and run the football. That's something that we prioritize. I think defensively, when you can get a team in third and seven, you just half expect them to line up in 10 or maybe 11 personnel where they're going to max protect and just drop back and try to find a concept where you can spring a guy open for 8 yards, you know, and get that first down by plus one. For us, third down and eight, third down and nine, if we can catch a team in two high and we feel confident that we can hand the football off on zone and make, you know, six or seven, get ourselves in a fourth and three or fourth and two. We feel like we've got a couple of money plays that we can run on those situations, so long as we get to that manageable fourth down. So obviously we're going to think more in terms of some past concepts that we like on third and fourth down. But even with that said, we're not going to get away from running inside hole on Wednesday. We're not going to get away from just the simple mechanics of quarterback, running back, tight end exchanges. We do that for every single practice. So we've just kind of brainwashed our guys into believing that in any situation, if we can get a favorable numbers situation in the box, 6-on-6, 5-on-5, even 7-on-7, then we'll run the ball to try and get ourselves in that situation where we feel like we can make two, especially on fourth down. We can spread the field out and give ourselves lots of room, get the ball to an athlete in space. Just do something simple that allows you to make 2 or 3 yards. And sometimes, I mean, even, you know, on fourth down and one or fourth down and two, you can stack the box and load everything up and spring a guy wide open and make a huge play on fourth down and short. So that's kind of the overall attitude you know, we don't really revamp our play calls necessarily. Again, we're going to try and find a way to run zone, run power, you know, maybe zone read or power stretch read in those kind of situations, give the, you know, the option for the quarterback to keep it, make those guys on defense account for more than just the back and defending, you know, defending turf in a, you know, on a spot concept or a hitch concept or a vertical out, you know, some of your basic pass plays that you might want to run in those situations. So just trying to give the defense the fear that everything is on the table. We haven't limited ourselves in any way just because, you know, we're batting with two strikes, so to speak.
Coach, in looking at being able to, again, pick up that many yards, you have to operate fast. You got to, you know, as a play caller, you have to have a method for that too. You certainly don't have a lot of time to be looking down at a call sheet and try to, you know, trying to be fast with your calls and keeping the offense moving. So, what tips do you have on calling plays fast?
For the longest time, I tried really, really hard to train myself to really map out my plays, get them on a call sheet, get them situated so that I could find plays easily and quickly in an efficient manner. And that I could rely on that card just through trial and error, especially prioritizing going fast, like you mentioned. It's so difficult to do. And I think you have to live with the fact that you're not always going to call the perfect play, number one. You can't script, you know, your first 10 plays in our kind of offense. You hear about, you know, old school West Coast offense where, you know, they may script the first 10 or 15 plays. And I think back of like when Bill Walsh was coaching at San Francisco and they did that. And it was uncanny how they had the ability to stay on schedule and stay on track. And for the longest time, I tried to do that. But what I found is there's just too many unknowns. There's too many variables. You don't know if, you know, the third play that you script, if it's designed to be a third down play, you don't know that third play is going to even arise and land on a third down situation. And you don't know going into a game if you're going to have half of your plays, in many cases, maybe first down plays. And I don't need 50 plays mapped out, 50 different plays for first down mapped out on a card. It's just too much to try and orient on a page, and it's certainly too difficult to try and find it in the heat of the battle. So what I've tried to do, really just through trial and error, is to really put in the time and really put in the preparation, the homework throughout the course of the week so that you have instant recall on the field, in the thick of things, and that you can, that you've got the answer without having to go reference a sheet. And one of the things that gave me confidence in that, and I remember this at convention a couple of years ago, listening to Chad Morris. He was still coaching at Clemson at the time, and I remember him talking about how the night before a game, whenever he would be getting ready, you know, kind of making his final preparations, you know, all the guys that were working on staff with him, you know, he would kind of send them home at whatever time in the evening, and he would stay up there till, you know, 12, 1, sometimes 2 o'clock in the morning, and he would just be studying, and he would really be, that would be his kind of solitary time that he would use to really let his call sheet and his kind of menu of plays that he had in his mind for that week and the stuff that they had executed well in practice that week, that he could really absorb that stuff. And being on the sideline, he'd have the ability to just kick those plays out, just automatically. And I should also mention, in our system, I stand on the sideline, and whereas I used to be up in the box. And I think if maybe you're up in the box and you're a team that does take things a little bit slower, and maybe you have a few packages in here or there where you want to go fast or you want to do some check with me type stuff, see what the defense lines up in and then try to get your best play call, you know, perhaps calling it from a sheet in that situation would be more conducive and a better fit for your offense. For us, being a D3 school, you know, we're understaffed on any given year. I mean, I've got my offensive line coach, Coach Emerson, Austin Emerson. He does a great job. He's down there with me. And he's kind of coaching his team within a team down there in the heat of the battle. And I've just gotten, in the same sense for the skill guys, I've gotten really comfortable being down there, having the ability to, you know, look into my quarterback's eyes, see his body language, get a good feel for you know, when his hand is hot or when his hand is cold, you know, and what he's feeling confident with or what he's maybe struggling with. And, you know, all of those things, I think, go back to you have to have the ability to spit those plays out as fast as possible. And I think maybe on the last show when we were talking, I mentioned we try really hard to limit our play calls down to one word as much as possible. It's not possible in every situation. We have some things that we have to tag. There's no getting around that. But if we can limit it to two words or limit it to three words, just cut out the fat and trim that as much as we possibly can. If you combine that with the ability to have that instant recall of the plays that you know are appropriate for given situations, and then you combine that with me, you know, I signal from the sideline, and that's another way that we've gotten rid of another link in that chain. So our process is even shorter, and there's less opportunities for there to be miscommunication. There's less opportunities for there just to be a glitch in your chain and in your progression. I think all of those things kind of help. So the best case scenario is that you get out there, you have that success on first down, second down, you know, in the situations where you've got to convert on third down, or you've got to get yourself in a manageable fourth down situation and you're able to convert it and keep the sticks moving. I think you just build your confidence on top of confidence as a play caller, same way you do if you're a player and you're playing quarterback out there and you get that first completion and you kind of get the jitters out of you. You feel like, hey, I've had some success. Now let's take another little baby step. Let's have another little bit of success. Like Nick Saban says, he says that every play has a life and a history of its own. And I used to not understand what that meant, but I think I do better now that you have to take inventory with every single play that happens because it sticks in the memory bank. You know, did what you did in the first quarter have success? Does it set something else up? Do you have the answer to take that next step and take advantage of how the defense may be reacting to something that you did in the first quarter? And now you've got kind of the next installment ready for them in the third quarter after they've gone in and made adjustments at halftime and they think that they've got you figured out. Those are all things that you have to continually take inventory of. And I just think that's really difficult when you're up in the box and you're trying to call it off of a sheet. I've been in too many situations where I've had that sheet, and before the game was over, I had that thing completely wadded up and thrown in the trash, you know. So that's kind of the way we've done it. And it's not very formulaic. It's not very – I didn't read that in a textbook. That just kind of came from doing it, you know, day in, day out, year in, year out. And we've settled into a pretty good routine with that, I think.
Well, and I think it emphasizes the importance of really, you know, you're going to learn a lot of things as a coach, but eventually you have to figure out the things that work best for you and what you're most comfortable with. And that's what you've done in that process. Coach, talk to us about game goals. What kinds of things do you look at? I know you said you're not looking for a certain amount of yards in the run or the pass. What kind of game goals do you have?
I could probably fill up a whole nother show talking about game goals. I'm a big numbers guy. I'm a Excel spreadsheet guy. I like things to be in nice, neat little boxes. And there's nothing more just oddly satisfying for me than to, you know, see a clean sweep and see the goals that you have throughout the course of the game. Just seeing all those things completely just checked off is a good feeling. And I would just say, again, our biggest goal, obviously, is to win the football game. And that can't be emphasized enough. I think you have to be very careful as a coach that you don't overemphasize the results-oriented stuff, because I think kids can very easily get attached to that and they lose sight of the larger goals. They see nothing but the trees and they miss the forest, or see nothing but the forest, miss the trees, however that saying goes. But with that said, I think there's some hard-coded things that you have to do that give you the best chance to succeed in our offense. And so, for example, our goal actually offensively is to get 42 points, which is nothing more than a touchdown every quarter. That's one in the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, and then one more touchdown at large somewhere in the first half and one more in the second half. So that's number one. We feel like we've got a chance to win if we can put 42 points up on the game. Conversely, our defense is trying to say, yeah, I know Coach Badson, our defensive coordinator, has a hard time admitting this, being a defensive guy and playing in an era where, you know, the goal was to limit people to 17 points or less or whatever. But their goal now in the game that we play, being so much more wide open and explosive, is to keep people under 24 points. So we've only lost one game in 41 ball games over the last 4 years where we didn't score 24 points as an offense. So we feel like that gives us a really good chance to win. The other big one for us, and I could go into many more, but the ones I would highlight for us is explosive plays. A 12-yard run or a 16-yard pass for us would be an explosive play. And then the other part of that is efficient plays. Any kind of run, anytime we hand the football off, if we can make 4 yards or the yards necessary for a first down, if you make a 3-yard run on third and one, that would be considered an efficient run, even though you're not making 4 yards. So 4 yards or the yards necessary to make a first on run would be an efficient run. And then in the pass game, a 7-yard pass or a pass that's, you know, is sufficient to make a first down would be an efficient pass. Those are things that we're after. And in the explosive stuff, we want 20% of our total plays to be explosive runs and explosive passes. So we feel like 2 out of every 10 times we hand the ball off, or 1 out of 5, we should be able to make 12 yards. And if we're running 85, you know, 90 plays a game, you know, we're handing it off, you know, 40, 45 times a game, you know, we're feeling pretty good if we can get, you know, 2 out of 10 all the way through, which that would give us, you know, in many cases, 8 to 10 run plays, and then about 8 to 10 pass plays where we're making those 12 yards or those 16 yards respectively. So that's what we're after explosive plays wise. And then efficient plays, we want to be upwards of 50% run efficiency and 50% pass efficiency. Those are things when I look back, I can see that we win when we do those things. And then the last one, I think that maybe the biggest one out of all those, and it's kind of uncanny how dead on it is our error percentage. And what the way we calculate that is, we look at every single play opportunity throughout the course of the game. You know, let's just say that there was 100 play opportunities offensively. And an error, the way we would define it, would be anytime we have an offensive penalty, a fumble, an interception, or a sack. That's kind of the way we define it. And we want to keep our error percentage under 10. And we are undefeated as a program when we have an error percentage less than 10% of the time. So if we run 100 plays in the game, and there's only 10 times where, you know, we've had one of those things, a sack, a penalty, or a turnover, you know, then we feel like we've got a great chance to win. So there's many others that I could go into, but the explosive plays, the efficient plays, and the error percentage really tell the story for us.
Well, thanks for the details on those, Coach, and for everything you shared so far. The final question for you is, you know, looking at all the things you do in season, and obviously you guys are very detailed, but looking at all the things you do in season, what's the one thing you'd point to that gives your team the advantage, the winning edge on game day?
I think I kind of went over this maybe the last time we talked, but we've just indoctrinated our guys with this notion that we're going to play harder than anybody that they encounter all season, which there's a lot more to that than just simply telling them, hey, play hard, because that can be very redundant, very cliche, and can, you know, can lose a lot of meaning if you just say it with without unpacking it and really redefining that for your guys in different ways so that they can really buy into it. But when we talk about playing hard, the thing that we really emphasize is that when you show up on Saturday, you should have it in your mind. You should have the confidence and the peace of mind of knowing that, number one, winning for you and for us is more important than it is for them. We want to win worse than those guys do, plain and simple. And then the second part of that, which I would just is just kind of that's 1A, and then 1B is that we have outworked our opponent and that we deserve to win. I think it's important for kids to learn the lesson that sometimes in football, the better team does not win. And that happens all the time. We see that on any given day, anybody can line up and beat anybody else, regardless of, you know, the preparation that each team put in. But we want to control what we can control and have the confidence of knowing, even though we can't quantify how much the opponent has worked, we can quantify how much we've worked and know that if we've given everything that we've got, that we do show up on Saturday and expect to win. And I know that's more psychological and intangible. You can't really put it in a jar or quantify those things. But nonetheless, we have just tried really, really hard to indoctrinate our guys with this notion that we are going to be the hardest playing team that they've ever encountered. And I challenge our players that, you know, every Saturday or every Friday before we go in and play that game on Saturday, that your goal should be for somebody on the other team to come across, shake your hand, whether it's a coach or a player, and just commend you and say, man, you're the hardest playing guy that I've ever been against. And so that's what we really hang our hat on as a program. I do believe in those intangible things and those, you know, those more psychological things that you have to be able to master. But I also believe that you have to match that with a detailed plan, and your guys have to believe that you have the best plan possible. You're going to be able to measure your success or your failure, and you're going to be able to learn from your failure, and you're going to be able to build on your success and just become more and more confident as the season goes on.
Coach, I appreciate you taking the time to join us and share some great ideas here in season. Best of luck to you and the Warriors as you finish out 2017.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.